As Mike mentioned, I will be covering the second phase of Abraham. If you'd like to, turn over to Hebrews chapter 11, where we see the heroes of faith, right? And we've been doing this now for 4 weeks, 5 weeks. And last time I was up here, we went over Noah, and I put a bunch of terminology up here that y'all came up with, describing what a hero, what characteristics a hero has, you know, bravery, compassion, faithfulness, things. We stayed out of the realm of superheroes as far as superpowers go, but we did include earthly heroism, right? Well, the things that we tried to tell our children, look up to this guy, right? Because he was a hero. Heroes are compassionate, selfless individuals. Those are great things to be. Okay? There's no reason why we shouldn't be encouraging those things. And in Hebrews chapter 11, we see that what we call the heroes of faith. So, before we get into that, one of the things that I mentioned with Noah was an assumption. I know y'all know was an assumption, but it had to do with not eating of animals initially. And I said maybe it was so that they could procreate, like man was allowed time to procreate. That's an assumption. So I hope that those who were taking notes didn't write that down as biblical fact, because that's not stated in the Bible. That was an assumption. And that was one of the ones that I didn't say based on an assumption. So I just wanted to clarify that before we continue on. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 17 through 19. We see Abraham again. Now, Abraham showed up earlier in the chapter in verses 8 and 9 and 10. Then we see Sarah also in verse 11, who is the wife of Abraham. But in 17 through 19 is where we're really going to focus today. And I hope that you're ready to read, because I don't know who's actually following in their Bible or not. So I'm just going to randomly pick people. Not really. I'm going to ask for a volunteer. We need to smile more when we're up here. Hebrews chapter 11, 17 through 19. If someone would please read those verses.
By faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son. But Moses said that Isaac shall thy seed be called. According to accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in the dead.
Okay. So tell me something. Well, actually, kiddos that are following along, first question, where do we find the heroes of faith? Non-kiddos, where do we find the heroes of faith? Hebrews 11, that's the first blank if you're filling in your pages. Hebrews chapter 11, thank you. let's think about this part of the passage here now. What was Abraham's faith based in off of this passage? What did he have faith in? God's promise. Boom. Gold star. Okay, so what promise, what promises did God give Abraham?
Bless all nations.
You'll be a father of all nations.
Blessed. Father of all nations, that kind of goes into the blessing, right? But what other promise was he given?
Seed.
Which is the blessed. We're blessed through Jesus, through his seed. What else was he promised? Land promise. Silver star. I'm kidding, you can have a gold one. We can, if y'all want to put this in your notes, Genesis 12, 1 through 3, and also verse 7, Genesis 17, 1 through 21, Genesis 15, verse 5. All three of those mention these promises. What's the third one? Nation, descendants, right? They shall be numbered like the what? Stars, sand on the
Right? Right? Okay. Lots of them. Okay. That's good, all right?
You need to remember these things. Royce went over these things last time a little bit. So this isn't new to us. Some of us have learned this even when we were in Bible classes younger, right? So, real quick, those are the three promises from God.
To Abraham. What is a promise?
Coming from God is a sure thing.
The sure thing from God. I'm sorry?
Covenant.
Covenant, okay. Here's our list.
Yeah.
Promise. Y'all are seeing what it's like when we do Lads to Leaders back there in that class. A lot of funny noises, a lot of writing on the board. The covenant, what's another word?
A verbal contract.
Verbal contract. What else? I'm sorry? It will be fulfilled, especially from God. Let's think in our terms, though, not from God. When we make a promise, what is it?
A vow.
A vow. Those are the words I'm looking for, too. Vow. What's another word? I'm sorry?
Agreement.
Agreement. We're just going to keep going. We've got to get this in our head, folks.
Promise of action.
Yeah, can be of action, right?
An oath.
That's the one I was really hoping for. Right there. Oath. Okay? Kiddos, if you're filling in your sheets, I think it's question 5. Oath. We see it in Leviticus. We see it in several passages. We'll get to those later. Okay? But if you just want to fill it in, oath. So, a pledge, right? A declaration has to be known. Okay, we need to think about it's more than just empty words, right? Okay, so is a promise more meaningful than a statement?
Yes.
When we were kids, well, some of us, I don't know, I can only speak for one generation, there was a certain kind of promise that even stood above other promises. Do we remember? Pinky promise. That's dumb. We shouldn't have done that. And I'll get to that later. Your yea should be yea and your nay should be nay, right? But we did it because we wanted that person to know that we were serious. This was a serious statement, right? If I said, yeah, I'll be over there in a little bit. In the back of my mind, I'm trying to get over there, but it's not as, I promise I will be there, right? You ever see all the good sitcoms from the 90s and the movies where the dad is trying real hard to get to the recital and he fails and causes all this drama? What did he say before he failed? I promise I will be there. He was trying, okay? Now, difference between a human promise and a God promise. God doesn't have sitcoms, right? He doesn't have that drama. He gets it done, okay? So, let's turn over to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, verse 33 through 37. Who can tell me who's speaking in Matthew chapter 5?
Christ.
I don't know who said it. Perfect. Several. 33 through 37. I need a reader, please.
Again, you have heard it said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no be no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one.
So, this passage by itself, not looking at any other passages, should we make oaths?
Yes.
in promises on things? No. Our yes should be yes and our no should be no. Turn over to James chapter 5. James chapter 5. I promise we'll get back to Abraham, but it's important that we know what a promise is. James chapter 5. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. James chapter 5, verse 12.
But above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea, and your nay nay, lest ye fall into condemnation.
Oh man, here's another one, right? So are we not to make promises and oaths and vows and things like that? Let's keep looking, okay? There's more. There's more. That's important, guys. It's really easy to take things out of context. All right? Leviticus 19, verse 12.
And you shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you proclaim the name of your God. I am the Lord.
You shall not swear by, what was the word that started with an F? Falsely. So if you're not supposed to swear falsely, can you swear some other way? Right? The commandment was to do it falsely. Don't do it falsely. That's wrong. Okay. Let's go over to Hebrews chapter 6, verse 13.
For when God made a promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself.
God swore, didn't he? He made an oath. Okay? So, going back to our other passages, if you look at the words closely, he's saying don't promise on something you have no control over. You can't promise on the name of God. You don't control God. God controls himself. No one controls God. Okay? Don't promise on something that you don't have control of. He said, don't promise on your own head because you can't even make your hairs turn gray or turn black, right? It's not yours to do. It's not yours. If it was a sin to make a promise or an oath, then God wouldn't have done it himself, would he? So, here's the thing. When we make a promise or an oath, we need to do it correctly, all right? Like God would have done it or has done it, that we see examples of, okay? So, did we read through verse 18 in Hebrews chapter 6? Verse 13 through 18? I don't think we did. I'm sorry? 13 was it, right? So I need someone to continue 14 through 18.
Saying, surely blessing, I will bless you, and multiplying, I will multiply you. And so after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. For men indeed swear by the greater, and an oath of confirmation is for them an end of all dispute. Thus God determining to show no more abundantly to the heirs of promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath, that by two immutable things, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we might have strong consolation, who have fled for refuge to lay hold of the hope set before us.
That's good, thank you. So if you kept reading, God made an oath on himself, but he didn't even need to do that. Because God cannot what? Right? Okay. But he did it for what reason? The same reason we say, I promise I'll be there. It's for emphasis. It's for emphasis. But really and truly, if we say it, it should be done. Right? We should do everything in our power to get it done. Yes be yes, and your no's be no's. All right. Can anyone tell me? Well, let me look and make sure I haven't forgotten any questions up here.
Chad,
yes, sir.
Appreciate you bringing that point out because we need to be reminded that words mean something. And that if we say we're going to do something, whether it's a home, job, we need to do it. If we say we're not going to do it, then whoever we're talking to shouldn't expect us to do it.
Right.
If we say we're not going to do that. So appreciate you bringing that.
Yeah. Okay, so looks like I haven't missed any questions other than that question from Royce's lesson, number two. What was Abraham's name before being called Abraham? Abram. And for those taking notes, that's in Genesis chapter 17, verse 5. Okay? And then further down in some verses, you'll see where Sarai's name is changed to Sarah. Okay? And in that same chapter, God's making another oath. It's just re-emphasis of the ones he's already made to Abraham. Yes, sir.
Why did God change the names? What was the purpose of changing the names?
I don't know, but reasoning through it, I would think because that is a mark of we're changing this. You're no longer going to be an old man. Kind of like when we get baptized, we get rid of the old man and become a new creature. I think that right there was Abraham had already messed up, right? Did he wasn't, we say he was fallible, right? Because why? He trusted that, he didn't trust God. He listened to man's wisdom and had a child with a concubine, or not a concubine, but a maidservant, right?
Sorry, I was saying Paul changed his name.
Yeah, and Paul changed his name to Saul. It was like I'm changing my life right now. I'm a new person. And that's the only thing that I can reason through based off of other times when we've seen names changed, such as Jacob was Israel. That was a big moment in his history, and we're making a point. But other than that, I don't know. That's all I can reason.
The age could have been holy, right?
I'm sorry?
The age could have been holy.
Yeah. Okay. Genesis chapter, I believe, 12 is where we begin to see Abraham. But our story comes from Genesis chapter 22, if you want to turn over there. Genesis chapter 22. By the way, kids, if you're filling in the blanks, Abram was number two. To kind of lead into chapter 22, Isaac is born to Abraham in verse 21. Okay? I guess to Sarah is how I should have said that. In the first five verses. And we find out that in those passages that Abraham was 100 years old. And if you go back into other chapters, they have it written down. Genesis chapter 17, Genesis chapter 21, 5. Using deduction, you can reason that Sarah was 90. Because when Abraham laughed, when God gave him the promise, he's like, "How you really expect me at 100 years old to have a child with Sarah who's 90? Okay? So, we know that Isaac was born when he was 100, and if the same ratio exists, and he wasn't just being satirical, is that a word?
Satirical,
thank you. Then it was, she would also be 90, okay? Just like the passage in Genesis chapter 17, verse 17. So, 90-year-old woman having a child, Isaac, miraculous, okay? Abraham had already messed up once, right? We see that he used earthly wisdom. We're going to touch on that too a little bit. Okay, and then as you go through chapter 21, you see that Hagar and Ishmael depart. They go their own way. And Abraham really cleaves to his family with Sarah and Isaac. And then we see a little confrontation between him and Abimelech, but then they work it out. And Abimelech gives them a well in exchange, and there's peace, and they're having a good time. They get some sheep away. It's nice. It's a beautiful story. You should read it. Chapter 21, 22 through 34. Then we see after these things, okay, time has passed. After these things, several days later, many days later, is I think is the terminology, which it's not in this certain circumstance, that's a turn of phrase that really doesn't mean just a few days. It means time passed. Okay, we see in verse 1, if we go ahead and read, let's read this chapter, folks. You can't study the Bible without reading So let's go 1 through 8. Someone please.
Chapter 22, 1 through 8.
Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, Here I am. And he said, Take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering and rose and went to the place. And Abraham said to his young men, Stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you. So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. But Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, My father, and he said, Here I am, my son. Then he said, Look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said,
All right, let's stop there. Okay, this was a 3 days journey from where they were. Okay, when I was in high school, I was really blessed with a great English teacher. She was fantastic. I hated that class, but I loved her teaching it. I hated being told what to read. And here I am telling y'all what to read. It's funny. Irony, right? Okay, so she really drilled in our heads, read the entire thing. Don't stop in the middle of a sentence. No one stops in the middle of a sentence, so why would you stop in the middle of a sentence? Okay? Let's set the scene, all right? So this is the end of a thought, according to my little indention. Someone better than me knew where the end of a thought was. We see a man, we see him get his son, two other men, donkeys, and they go on a journey for 3 days because God said, go. Okay? Seems to be the pattern for Abraham, isn't it? God says go and he goes. also, what I like to point out is when God said Abraham, he says, Here I am. You ever been needing to get someone's attention? You're like, hey, Bryce, and Bryce is like, and you don't know if he really heard you or not. That happens to me all the time because I'm going deaf. So I can't really tell if people can hear what I'm saying. And so I always tell my kids, answer me. Say, what you need? Or yes, sir. Or whatever it is. Just answer me. Let me know you heard what I said. Okay? I've asked questions before and gotten a nod, but I'm in another room, so how am I supposed to see the nod? Okay? So, here I am. Just little asterisk there that I wanted to point out. Now, Abraham knew what was going on, right? He knows what's happening. He's the only one that knows what's happening, isn't it? Servants don't know. The servants knew. Don't you think he would have asked for some help to hold down his son? Okay, his son didn't know. He asked the question, right? Didn't know what was about to happen. So, I looked this up. And there's a lot of assumptions to be made in this realm. So let it be known this is an assumption. But how old would you suspect Isaac is at this time? I'm sorry?
Late teens.
Late teens, okay. Any other answers?
He's big enough to carry the wood for the offering.
He is, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if Jaden's big enough to carry the wood for the offering. Eat more peanut butter. No, but was he 5, 6, 3, just weaned from Sarah? No, okay? Now, we're told time has passed. There, and just FYI, some of the Jewish customs that are still passed on today from Josephus and others put them all over the place. Just weaned to 10 to 19, 20 years old. And then if you read your Bible, You can't tell how much time has passed, but if you were to jump into verse or chapter 23, you see Sarah dies. And Sarah dies while they're away. Okay? Now, I don't know how long they were away after the sacrifice. I don't know. No one knows. Except God. I guess Abraham and Isaac and Sarah, they know. But they're not here right now. So we don't know how much time passes. But what we do know is that Sarah died when Isaac was 37 years old. Born when she was 90. Verse 23, Sarah, or chapter 23, verse 1, Sarah lived 127 years. Do the math, that's 37 years old. So I would argue, under an assumption, that he was older than late teens. I would argue he was probably in his 30s. Who in your 30s would let your dad stab you? We focused on Abraham. Let's think about Isaac for a second. Okay? Let's keep reading, actually. Verse 9 through 14. Somebody, please.
And they came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there, and laid the wood in order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand, and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven, and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not thy hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his thorns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. And Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah. And it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen.
Okay. So, all right, now we have the rest of the story. Okay, so let's dive in some more. All right? Who thinks I'm a kid? Yeah, depending on your age, you think I'm a kid, right? So don't let that word lad fool you. Okay, it's in there. They say lad. God is endless ages. Everybody's a lad to God and angels. Okay? And when Abraham called... Whose dad called them son or boy till they were 30 years old? 34? Probably when I'm 35 too. Okay, my dad will still call me those things. He's not being disrespectful. It's just that is how he sees me still. I'm his boy. Okay, so don't get caught up on that word lad is what I want to get at. All right. 30-year-old man, let's say, somewhere between 25 and 30 even, if we want to play real conservative, versus a 120-year-old man, how easy do you think it is to tie up a guy like that when you're 125 years old who just carried a bunch of lumber up there? He's a good, strong kid. Probably real difficult. This shows faith from Isaac also. I guarantee you he could have run away from a 125-year-old man, possibly 130. Okay? He had faith too. So parents, what does that tell us about our kids when they're 30 years old? We got to keep pounding it in them, don't we? They got to keep knowing that God is God. And his promises are in stone, for lack of better terminology. Okay? You can even back that up if you turn over to 1 Samuel. You see Eli the priest, he's punished because he doesn't correct his sons who are destroying worship for the Israelites, just destroying it. Okay? So parents, this one hits home if you have adult kids. If you're not making sure your adult kids are on the right path, you can be punished just like Eli. God's not, God's forever. You know, he's the same at the beginning of the world as he is now, and so on and so forth. He still has the same ideology of obey me. Okay? So, next question. How many, you don't have to raise your hand. I like to raise my hand because it's fun. But how many could kill an animal, okay, for a sacrifice? An animal. The one, you know, you raise this sheep from the time it was a baby and it's beautiful and spotless and it looks at you with those weird cross eyes that sheep have. That was a joke. But anyways, and you just think, can I do it? Yeah. Okay. They did it. Could we do it? It'd be harder. Our culture's a little different, right? Now let's put into a perspective a human being. Stranger. Someone we don't even know. Okay? Now think about a friend. Just a friend. Okay? What about your offspring? Your kiddo? You watched him, you know, fall off the bicycle and get back up and try again. Okay? Now he's 30 years old and he's trusted you his whole life. And now you're about to go stab him. Did Abraham stop himself? No. What does that tell you? It took an angel from God to stop Abraham from killing his son. What does that tell you? He was committed. He had already reasoned through it in his mind. It was happening. It was happening. And what's even crazier is his son just let it happen. He let him get bound up and sit on that thing. Okay? This is building the scene, folks, because if we don't understand what the scene is, we don't appreciate the passages. Let it get personal. Okay? Let it get personal. Abraham was a man. He was the man. Why? Because he had faith in God that God would bring his son back, right? We read it. Very beginning of the class. Hebrews chapter what? 11. Heroes of faith. This man is a hero of faith. Okay? Is he infallible? No. He messed up. Yes, sir.
Doesn't it use a term? Let me rethink the term. Doesn't it at least sound like Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego? The mindset that even if God does not save us, we still will not bow down. That's faith.
Yes.
You know, God will take care of us. God's going to save us. But if he does, so what? We're going to go. We're still not going to bow down to your image. And that's the mindset that Abraham had. Abraham had the mindset of God said to do it, I'm going to do it. Because God's going to take care of this situation.
Yep.
Because God had promised that. God had promised that seed and that what we've talked about, a descendant, the numerous of the stars and the dust.
Yep.
So what was God going to do? Follow through.
Yep. Yes, sir, Mike.
Abraham already knew that God would raise up that son would die.
That's right. That's right.
That was his absolute faith in what God promised.
Yep. So, Abraham is unique in that he got physical promises from God, right? Very physical. Through his seed, the world would be blessed, right? That's physical because it's a seed. Land, physical. Descendants, physical. Okay? What are we promised? Spiritual. Okay? What was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego promised? It was spiritual too. They knew where their end would be if they disobeyed God. And they knew where their end would be if they obeyed God, regardless of how they got there. Okay? And that's what we have. We have that kind of promise from God that our faith is built on, that no matter what happens to us here, the end result is great as long as you obey God. Yes, sir.
think a great point we can understand and appreciate is that Abraham being a friend of God, God was personal with him. Number two, God taught him about something he had never seen before, never even heard of before, the resurrection. He knew that his God had the power to raise up his son. He never experienced that before. He never heard that before.
Yep.
But he trusted God.
Yep. Yep.
We've never seen the resurrection before. We've never heard, we never experienced anything like that. People die all the time.
That's right.
They don't come back. But we're having the same faith. God's going to raise us up one day.
That's right. How long do I have?
I don't know.
Am I done?
5 minutes.
I have 5 minutes. Okay. Moving forward. Good comment. Thank you. Very true. 1 Corinthians 3:19. I need one person to get that. I need someone to go to James chapter 3, verse 13. Someone say I if you got that one. All right. Jaden's got that one. Someone turn to the book of Proverbs, chapter 2 and chapter 3. Someone say I for that one.
I.
All right, we got another one. Okay, I have more, but we're just going to start with those. Okay? 3, verse 19. Who had that one?
For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. For it is written, he catches the wise in their own craftiness.
While you're there in 1 Corinthians, go ahead and read chapter 1, verse 19 also.
For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent.
Okay. Who had James chapter 3, 13 through 18?
Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceful, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace.
All right, real quick on that one. Notice the distinct differences between earthly wisdom and godly wisdom, or wisdom from above is what it says there. Okay, there are distinct differences. One is selfishness, the other one is not. Okay, just notate that because I don't have time to get into that. All right, who had Proverbs?
I did.
All right, chapter 2, verse 6.
For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding.
Okay, chapter 3, verse 7 now, please.
Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil.
Okay, so is everyone seeing a distinction in the word wisdom there? That adjective that comes before wisdom, godly or earthly or maybe worldly, you may want to say there, there's a definite difference, right? Where does the godly wisdom come from? From God or from above? That's number 6 for those that were wondering. Also, number 3, just because we didn't touch on it, kids, it was Isaac, choice B. He is the one that God promises the descendants through. Okay, and the rest of the promises. Number 4 is right there if y'all didn't write it down. Okay, I think I covered all the questions. Okay, so if you want to take some more notes, there's Proverbs 16:25, Proverbs 28:11, Isaiah 5:21, Romans 1:22, and there's more, okay? I looked up a whole bunch because I didn't know how much time I was going to be taking up with the stuff beforehand. So those are also good passages distinguishing between man's wisdom and God's wisdom. Okay, so here's the question. Did Abraham have a great track record using godly wisdom? He had a good track record. I mean, the ones that we're told about, he didn't, because he had two big flubs, big ones, and they were identical. Isn't that funny? But he did use godly wisdom. But his track record shows that there were times where he did not. Big ones. Okay? Which was what? Anybody? Yes. Yes, and that happens twice. Genesis chapter 12 and Genesis chapter 20. He does it once in Egypt, where he thinks the heathens, the lawless ones down there, well, they'll kill me and they'll take you because you're beautiful, right? And then he does it again with Abimelech. And later on, they make a great truce between them. Abimelech was not an evil man by world standards, okay? He was fair. He's like, why? In fact, he asked God, why? I didn't know, you know? So, and then we see Ishmael, okay? Flub number three. He listened to worldly wisdom. Now, granted, Sarah messed up too. Her faith was failing in that situation. Okay? She was giving up on that promise. Shame on her too, but shame on him. Now, think about this for a second. This is how I'm going to conclude. What if Abraham had relied on earthly wisdom when he's standing next to Isaac at that altar? What scenario do you think could have happened? It's not biblical. It's not fact. So go ahead and spit it out. Whatever. What do you think could have happened? I'm sorry? Killed him with earthly wisdom?
No.
No. What about faking it? Faking the death. Pretending like he killed Isaac, but he didn't. Or maybe just not doing it. Because he would have said, if the seed promise is through Isaac, I can't kill him. Right? He would have used earthly wisdom. We know that. If I want grandchildren, I'm not going to go kill Kipton and Caitlin. Right? Because I'm not having another kid. Knock on wood. No, I'm kidding. But seriously, that's earthly wisdom, right? It's a natural law. You want grandchildren, you have to have children, right? So, just think about it. If he had relied on earthly wisdom, he would have bowed out of killing Isaac. But he didn't. He trusted godly wisdom. Okay? Same thing applies today. Sometimes, in the state of catastrophes, things like that, we try to figure out why, and we try to reason through things worldly, but we can't do that, okay? We can't try to work our way through a terrible situation with earthly wisdom. We need to go to this book first. Now, God gives us wisdom, and a lot of it is based on earth law, you know, law of nature, and we can reason through it. But when it's in direct conflict with what God says to do, we cannot choose that path. Okay? So just remember that. And I'm finished. I think we'll have a song and then a devotional. Any questions before I... Yes, sir.
I just want to make one point. In Romans 4, verse 20, the Bible says that Abraham staggered not at the promises of God through unbelief. And so what set Abraham apart, even though he had some blubbers, some mistakes, he never did not believe God. He always believed God all the way through. And so that's what brought him through. And that's why God, he was a friend of God. He staggered not at the promises.
Yep. Have you ever thought about someone saying, well, if God said, Abraham, you're going to be the father of all nations, blessed and everything, that maybe he thought that it was up to him to get there? You know, sometimes we do that, and I think that's where he falls. In Egypt and with Abimelech, he thought it was up to him to make sure Sarah stayed safe. It wasn't up to him. God was already in control of that situation. So anyways, just a thought to chew on. Thank you all very much.